Rick asked me why there were bullet holes in the PowerPoint there. It's a warning to people who think about falling asleep during the sermon, just so you know. I want to ask the men to imagine something that for some of you will be very easy to imagine, and for some of you may be a little more challenging, but I think you can do it. So for the men, I want you to imagine with me giving your daughter away in marriage. Now, some of you have already done that. You don't have to imagine it. You can just remember it. Some of you, like me, might have a daughter or more than one daughter who's not yet married, and this is something that you've thought about, although I try not to think about it much, but you can't help but think about it. Maybe you don't have a daughter at all, but I think that you can imagine, I think that you don't have much trouble imagining that you have a daughter, and you have that special relationship with your daughter. She's a daddy's girl, and she's special to you, and you're special to her, and you have a beautiful relationship with your daughter. And I want you to imagine with me giving your daughter away in marriage. I want you to imagine walking her down the aisle, holding her hand, and they say to you, "Who gives this woman in marriage?" And you say, "Her mother and I." And you kiss her on the cheek, and you place her hand in the hand of her very soon-to-be husband. I want you to think about what kind of man you want that man to be. When you put the hand of your daughter into the hand of the man that she will marry, what kind of man do you want him to be? Well, obviously, we would say, well, I want him to provide for her. I want him to make sure that she has what she needs. And I want him to make sure that in a dangerous and difficult and sometimes scary world, I want to be sure that he is the kind of man that would never hurt her, but that would only protect her. But in this audience, we would say more than that. We would say, in addition to providing and protecting, I want him to be a Christian. I want him to be a believer. What does that mean? Does it mean that you want him to be somebody who at some distant time in the past became a Christian and that's about as far as it went? Do you mean that you want him to be an occasional churchgoer or a regular churchgoer, but one whose faith stops at the door? Or do you want him to be a man who's serious about his faith, who is dedicated to knowing and to doing the will of God, who is committed to obeying what God has told him to do, particularly as it relates to his relationship with your daughter? Well, everybody's wife is somebody's daughter. The woman that you're married to is somebody's daughter. Or if you're not yet married, the woman that you will marry is somebody's daughter. And in more cases than not, there's the occasional difference. But in more cases than not, the father of your wife wanted a good man for her. And in most cases, our wives were raised in Christian homes where the parents wanted their children, their daughters, to marry genuine Christian men, not just believers, not just churchgoers, but Christians. What kind of husband did your wife's father get for his daughter? Are you the kind of man that when you place the hand of your daughter in her husband's hand, are you that man that you want her to marry? Well, in order to know that, we've got to know what that even is. What does it mean to be a Christian husband? That's what we're going to talk about this morning as we continue our series that we started last Sunday morning on the Christian family. This sermon is important for everybody, obviously for the men who are husbands, for the men who will be husbands. It's essential to know what we're talking about this morning and to do it. But you might say, I'm a senior citizen woman. I'll never be a husband. Or I'm a girl, and I'll never be a husband. Or I'm an older man, and my wife has passed on, and I will never marry again. Maybe you're in a situation where you're never going to be a Christian husband. But if you're a Christian wife, you need to know how to help your husband be a genuinely Christian husband. If you have kids or grandkids, you need to exert all the influence you can to help them become Christian husbands. If you're a member of our congregation or some other congregation, you need to be an influence on the husbands you have, because I'm telling you, we need all the help we can get. You need to help us. And aside from all of that, our world doesn't know anything about true husbandhood. Our world doesn't know anything. And regardless of your personal situation, you need to be the kind of person who shines a light about the kind of person a Christian husband is, because our world needs to hear it. What we're talking about this morning is for everybody. If I were to ask you to sum up a Christian husband in three words, I'm not going to ask you to share it because I'm not sure what I could get, and I just don't want to have to clean up a mess this morning on aisle nine. So we won't worry about that. But if I were to ask you, what is, in three words, what is the summation, in three words, of a Christian husband, what would you say? What would your three words be to define and encapsulate a Christian husband? Well, I'll tell you what the Bible says. The Bible says, and I will give you the literal words from the Bible. The first one is leave. Now, give me a minute on that one. Let me explain that one first, right? Don't say, oh, leave. That means what it, you don't know what it means yet. So hang on a second. Leave is the first one. Love is the second one. And live is the third one. According to the Bible, a Christian husband's obligation, his whole life, can be summed up in three words. The first one is leave. Now, who's being left and for what, right? So we've got to be careful who we're leaving. And so here it means to leave your father and mother. Fundamental truth about marriage, Genesis 2:24, when Jesus was asked about marriage, he went straight back there and said, here's the answer. Leave your father and mother. Secondly, love your wife, Ephesians 5. Love your wife. And thirdly, live with your wives in an understanding way. Now, men, stay with me, because I know all the men are going, understand? Who can understand a woman? I can't understand a woman. I've been trying for 30 years, and I still don't understand her. Where 30 years came from, I'll never know. That was a totally random number, but strikes pretty close to home. But men are saying, I can't understand a woman. I've never been able to understand women. What are you talking about? Well, it says we have to. So we're going to talk about what that means. What we're talking about is this. What these phrases, these commands mean is that, first of all, your wife is your priority. To leave father and mother means that when you get married, in your list of priorities, number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, down through 10, and including 11, is your wife. She is number 1. The second thing that we're told, to love your wives, means to engage in sacrificial service for her. And the third thing means to give to your wife attentive awareness. And we'll flesh that out, and we'll see what that means. So let's just go through these, and then we'll be done. Number 1, leave father and mother. As a husband, your primary priority is your wife. She's number 1. She is the ultimate consideration. In every life, something has to come first. There are no ties in life. There are no ties for priority. Nobody has two. They go back. Nobody has that. There, in every life, there's one. There is one thing that gets considered first, and everything else has to come after it. There's one thing that everything else gets pushed aside for. There can only be one, and everybody has one. There's only one thing in everybody's life that you say, that's the thing, and everything else, if necessary, gets pushed aside. in the life of every husband, that thing has to be, for some it's work. For some people it's work. For some people, everything, vacations, meals, time together, health, sleep, everything gets pushed aside for work. For some people, everything gets pushed aside to make more money and to get more stuff. For some people, pleasure, vacation, recreation, number one. For some people, for most people, it's self. For most people, it's self. That's what we call ourselves, number one. But in the life of every husband, it is his wife. Now, why does he say to leave your father and mother? Because they want you out, man. It's time to go, right? By the time you hit 18, they're like, okay, I'm feeling it now. We're getting there. In 20, 21, they're like, all right, man, I need that room. I need to do something. I need a she shed or a man cave or something back in there, but not your smelly self in that room. I need you to be moving on, right? And so that's part of what it means. But here's the thing. Every person's first primary relationship is parents. Everybody's first primary relationship is parents. And the most important relationship in your life is your parents first. The Bible says, Exodus 20 and verse 12, one of the Ten Commandments, honor father and mother. And did you know that the Ten Commandments are divided into commands that deal with directly with God and commands that deal with other people? Did you know that the first command that deals with other people is not don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't covet. The first command that deals with other people is, guess what? Honor your father and mother. And Paul said it's the first commandment with a promise. It is a big commandment. It's a big deal. God said about Abraham in Genesis 18 and verse 19, I have chosen him that he may command his children after him to keep the way of the Lord. To what? To command. As humans, our first primary relationship is our parents. Even when Jacob's children were adults, they still had to do what Dad said. Even when Jacob's children were adults, Dad was still telling them what to do. This is the first primary relationship in every person's life. Proverbs chapter 1 and verses 8 and 9. If mom and dad say it, you have to do it, and you can't ever not do it. That's what that says. This is our first. But what does he say in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24? Leave father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. That means that when you marry, the marriage relationship takes precedence over every other relationship. When you marry, every other relationship, everyone, comes after the marriage relationship. When you take a wife, your wife becomes primary even over parents and extended family. Your wife becomes, now I want you to think about that. Your parents made you. They made you. You didn't exist until mom and dad made you. Your mother carried you, lugging you around, sweating, back aching, bathroom habits completely rearranged, carrying you around for 9 months. And then God says, when you get married, now it's the wife, not the mom and the dad. The wife is that important. It is not your friend. You can't live single when you get married, but a lot of people do. I've known a lot of people over the years who make no change in their daily schedule after they get married. They go out and do at night or on the weekends what they always did. They have their friends over, whether their wife likes it or not. They spend their money the way they've always spent it, and there's no consideration of a man's wife over his friends. Even church. I've known a lot of people over the years, a lot of husbands, preachers, elders, and others, that if you went to look for them, there's no reason to go by their house, go by the church building, go by the hospital, go by somebody's house, go by somewhere else, because they're dedicating all of their time to the church and their wife and kids are being neglected. You have no idea how many preachers have kids who grow up not to be Christians because dad was ministering to everybody else, not his own family. We always need to be sure that our elders and our deacons understand that we understand their families come first. Their wives come first. It's the primary relationship, certainly more so than work. Certainly more so than work or hobbies, recreation, things that we do that we enjoy. And yes, even more than children. Your relationship with your wife is more important. Too many people put the kids first. They come first in everything. They come first in every decision. Everything revolves around them. When what God says is the primary relationship is with your wife. Not, God did not say, leave your father and mother, have kids and be joined to them. He said, be joined to your wife. The noted theologian and occasionally successful basketball coach, John Wooden, said this, the best thing that a father can do for his children is to love their mother. The best thing that a father can do for his children is not put his children first, it's to put his wife first. And in that way, to serve his children. Secondly, the Bible says that as husbands, we are supposed to love our wives. That means engaging in sacrificial service for our wives. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. And notice what Paul says there, very familiar passage, but I think there might be something here that maybe we overlook and don't always notice in Ephesians chapter 5, where he talks about sacrificial service for our wives. He gives us two things. First of all, he gives us the model. He gives us the model. Here's your example. And then he also gives us the measure. Here's how much you're supposed to love your wife. Of course, the model in this passage is Christ. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. The key note in the example of Jesus' love is his sacrifice. Jesus loved the church and he died for her. Not a man in the world. And if there is one, it's a red flag. If this ever comes up and a man that you're dating or interested in answers this any other way, run screaming. Because every man is going to say this. Wife is in danger, bullet, van, bus, car, burglar, doesn't matter. Every man in the world is saying, I'd take a bullet for her. I'd step in front of a speeding car. I would die for her. I would take anything so that she didn't have to. Every man says that. And most of us mean it. Most of us actually would do that. What's harder than that, though, is living for them. Any day, I would rather step in front of a bullet for my wife than to have to pause a football game and get up and take out the trash. Give me a bullet any day. My wife told me yesterday morning, just one thing I wanted, just one thing. Isaiah's out of town. For those of you who don't know, oldest son lives in Nebraska. Daughter's in college. Youngest son's out of town. Just me and Tracy at home. It's been glorious. Don't tell the kids I said that, but it's been pretty cool. She said to me, the only thing I want, the only thing I care about, all day, 24 hours, I want to hang some pictures. We had some work done at the house, walls painted, pictures are down, still down. I want to hang pictures. All I want, hang pictures. We didn't get any pictures hung. They're still sitting exactly where they were. Now, if Tracy would have said, I have a terminal illness, and the doctor said, you can take it, and you can die instead, I would go, yep, sign me up, hook me up, give it to me, I'll die for you. But don't ask me to hang those pictures. Please don't ask me to hang those pictures. They're ridiculous, but that's how we are. Because I would swim the deepest ocean, climb the highest mountain, cross the hottest desert. But please don't ask me to fill up your car with gas. Please don't ask me to do that. Anything but that. It's ridiculous, but that's how we are. What we need to do is live for them. We probably will not have to die for them. And part of living for them means to give them strength and security and support. Notice what he says in Ephesians chapter 5 when he says in verse 29, he talks about nourishing and cherishing your wife. What that makes me think of is a new plant, a little sprout that you're going to put outside here in North Carolina. Now, you know what that means. You have to be very careful about when you put that thing out. Because the weather around here is absolutely ridiculous. You can't count on anything. And so you might put that thing out and then it freezes 5 minutes after you put it out. Or we get a hailstorm. Or we get too much rain. Or we get no rain. Or we get all kinds of crazy stuff. So you put out that little plant and what do you have to do? Well, you got to pick the right place. You got to prepare the soil. You got to put it in, mound the dirt up over it. And then, yeah, this time of year, you might have to cover it at a freeze warning or a hail warning. You might have to water it more, water it less, fertilize it, weed it, pick bugs off of it, all kinds of stuff. But if you want that plant to grow, you're going to have to nourish it, cherish it, take care of it. And that's what our wives need. Our wives don't need a monosyllabic Neanderthal man who sits on a couch and grunts. That's not what they need. And the only complete sentence you ever get is, what's for supper? Or maybe it's not even complete. Supper? So you don't even have to go to that trouble. But this is what Paul says they need. But here's the most important thing. I want you to notice why Jesus did what he did. Jesus gave himself up for her. Look at verse 26, so that he might sanctify her, in order, verse 27, for her to be holy and blameless. A husband's primary responsibility is not her financial well-being. It's not her physical well-being. It is her spiritual well-being. A husband's main job is to make sure she is cared for and growing spiritually. But in most Christian homes, who's the strongest of the pair? In most Christian homes, between husband and wife, who's the strongest? Who studies with the kids, prays with the kids, talks to the kids? Who makes sure that the kids are in church? I know a lot of husbands do it, and I don't like it when husbands get shaded. I don't like it when husbands get the shaft. I complain about it. It drives my family crazy. Because men are always shafted with that kind of stuff. I know a lot of men do. But in most Christian homes, the spiritual strength is the woman, when it's supposed to be the man. It's our job to make sure that our family is spiritually taken care of. The measure of our love, he says, is that we love our wives. Look at verse 28. Husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. That's the measure. Now, here's what we do with this most of the time. Most of the time we say, what that means is, a husband has to love his wife as much as he does himself. True, but not what he means. I want you to see in this passage the deeper meaning of what it is that he's saying. So let's look at, for just a moment, the context. Verse 28, here's the command. Husbands, love your wives as your own body. Now, the reason for that is because a man who loves his wife loves himself. If you want to have, and I'm not the happy wife, happy life thing, I hate that, but Paul is getting at an important principle here, that if you want to be happy and have a happy home life and a happy family and to have the best life you can have, the best thing you can do is not look out for yourself, it's look out for her. A man who loves his wife loves himself. And then he gives us this principle. No one ever hated his own flesh, but he nourishes it and cherishes it. You ever see a man not take care of himself? You ever see a man not to, he's hungry, what does he do? He eats. Wants a boat, he buys it. Wants to, you know, fix up a car, he fixes it up. Wants to take a nap, takes a nap. Man takes care of himself. He has to take care of his wife to the same degree. The example, now notice he starts to get to the point here. Just as Christ also does the church. Why? Because we are members of his body. And then here he nails it down, and here's what he's saying. When he says to love your wife as yourself, he doesn't mean love her as much as yourself. He means love her because she is yourself. When he says love your wife as yourself, he doesn't mean love her as much as yourself. He means love her because she is yourself. You are one flesh. And literally, everything that you do to hurt her hurts you because you're one flesh. And everything that you do to help her helps you because you're one flesh. The final thing that Paul says is to live with your wives in an understanding way. That means to live with them with attentive awareness. This is 1 Peter 3, so let's turn and look at that for just a minute, and then we'll wrap up and be done. 1 Peter chapter 3 has a context that we never look at, that I think is essential to understand what it is that Peter is saying. So we all know this. We all know this part. 1 Peter 3:7. You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker. Now notice he says, as with. Live with your wife as though she were weaker. Treat her with care as if she was weaker than you. Live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. There's a phrase, at least in mine, and there's something almost certainly in yours, though it may be different. There is a phrase in that verse that clues you into the fact that this verse is a continuation of what he said before. Look again at verse 7. You husbands, in the same way. There is a context here that we need to be aware of, and it goes all the way back to chapter 2 and verse 13, where he says to submit to the government. And then he says in verse 18, slaves, submit to masters. Then he says in 3:1, wives, submit to husbands. Then he says in the same way, husbands. What he's saying is that submission is a form, or living with them in an understanding way is a form of submission. Living with your wife in an understanding way is a form of submission. It takes submission to try to understand her. And as we all know, submission is very difficult. Submission is very hard because it means putting yourself on the back burner and putting someone else first. Submission is hard. Living with understanding is hard in the marriage relationship because, as we know, men are from Mars. and women are from Venus. It's just a fact. Men are different than women. Men and women deal with things in very different ways. Now, what I'm about to share with you, I understand, are generalities. But they are generalities fully supported by scientific research into the differences between men and women. When it comes to emotion, men and women deal with them very differently. Men tend to suppress them. Women tend to express them. You can see why this would be a bit of a challenge. Because a husband doesn't want to talk about it. The wife wants to talk about it. And now we're at an impasse. And it can cause a lot of difficulty. When it comes to stress, men tend toward fight or flight. Women tend toward tend and befriend. Men, when they're under stress, want to either run from it or beat somebody up. I've met the occasional woman who's that way too. It's pretty unpleasant. But most women tend to deal with stress by tending to those in need and reaching out for more support. As you can imagine, this can cause some conflict. When it comes to communication, men and women are very different. In communication, men are typically looking for an exchange of information. Tell me what you want, I'll do it, and we'll be done. Tell me where you want to eat, we'll go there and be done. Tell me what you want me to wear, I might wear it, and we'll be done. Right? We just want an exchange of information. Women, instead, want to engage in connection. She doesn't just want to talk about where we're going to eat. She wants to talk about why you want to eat there and what your memories of it are and what you enjoy there and why you enjoy it and all that. And all you want to say is, we're going to Longhorn and that's all I want to talk about. Can we just not talk about it? Right? This is a big difference. And so you can see, because men and women are so different, it takes a lot of work on our part to understand them and to meet them where they are. Living with understanding is hard because it requires of us what we are bad at. Living with understanding requires of us what we are bad at. If I am to live with my wife in an understanding way, it means that I've got to put the work in, to pay attention, to notice, to put forth effort. And normally, I struggle with being distracted or being tired. And that can be difficult. It also, because most of us are bad at communication, especially the listening part. And if we're going to live with our wives in an understanding way, we have to listen to them. Most of us are bad at patience. Isn't it crazy? When I was a kid, and this will take some explaining to those of you who are younger, when I was a kid, if you wanted to learn something, if you had a question, you would go to the World Book Encyclopedia. Remember those? Those were awesome. Had a whole set of World Book Encyclopedias. And to get an answer to something, you had to get up and then go to the shelf, think about where would this be, look in it, probably not there. Then you go to the end of the article, also see, and you would go through all that. And then you would find it, you would read it. Sometimes it didn't have it at all. It's a little process. Now what do you have to do? Now what you have to do is take out your phone, turn it on, go to your search engine, type it in, hit search, and typically wait about how long? About 0.3 seconds or something like that. Do you ever get aggravated when it doesn't come back in 0.3 seconds? You ever do that? I do that all the time. Maybe the Wi-Fi is jacked up or the data is not as fast as it ought to be, and it's been a second and a half, and I'm going, come on! What's wrong with you? This is ridiculous! I love what Isaiah does. When Isaiah, who's without question the most impatient person I know, Isaiah treats his phone like it's an old lawnmower. And when it's not coming back quick enough, he starts hitting it like it's going to jar something into place. But isn't it ridiculous how impatient we've become because of fast food, microwaves, and technology? But living with your wife in an understanding way requires a tremendous amount of patience. And we've got to be willing to put that forth. Finally, it's difficult because we all sin. And sin causes problems in marriages and other relationships. Well, living with understanding is difficult. But here's what we husbands need to understand. Your relationship with God depends on it. You don't get to throw up your hands and say, it's been 30 years, I don't get her yet, and I never will, and I'm done trying. You don't get to do that. Your relationship with God depends on it, because if you don't live with her in an understanding way, your prayers to God are hindered, and your relationship with God is not what it ought to be. So, next week, Lord willing, we'll continue our series on the Christian family by looking at the Christian wife. What does the Bible say about the responsibilities and lifestyle of a wife who is a Christian? Tonight, Lord willing, we'll be back here at the building at 6 p.m. for a Bible study. We're continuing our study of the Old Testament sacrificial system, and so we'll talk about that tonight, Lord willing, and so we invite you back to be with us for that. So, take out your songbook and turn to the invitation song. Jay, you changed it. Where did Jay go? Jay's gone. There he is. You're not in the right place. 889. Number 889 will be our invitation song, and we'll sing that song in just a minute. This morning, it might be, as we talked about these things, that maybe you're not a husband at all, maybe you are, and some things have been particularly applicable and direct. Maybe you're not a husband, but still you understand that God has a standard, He has a will, He has some things that He wants you to be doing, and maybe you understand that you're not really doing those things the way that you should. That's one reason that we're here, is to help with that. And so, if you have a spiritual need this morning, whatever the case, maybe you're not comfortable doing anything publicly, get with me or with one of our elders, Neil and Troy in the pink and Ray up here in the green. Get with one of us, and we'd love to sit down and talk with you. If we'd like to, you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing this song.